Sports bettors, Circa Sports now presents Palm Saturdays with Circa's Vice President of Operations, Mike Palm. Live from Bar Canada at the D from downtown Las Vegas. Here on 104.3 The Score. And watch live on YouTube and Twitch. Featuring the latest and the greatest of the sports betting landscape from coast to coast, along with some great guests. Here he is, Mike Palm.
Good morning and happy Saturday, happy Derby Saturday to everyone. That's right, the first Saturday in May, May 2nd, Kentucky Derby Saturday, and certainly around our properties here in Las Vegas. That will be the theme today, whether it's specials, drink specials at the bar or food specials at the restaurants. We'll be playing the full card from Churchill Downs today. With volume at all of our different viewing options, including the sportsbook and stadium swim. I have to admit, I haven't really followed the Derby trail this year. And for me to invest any kind of serious money in the Derby, I would need to have seen these horses run, not just be able to read the daily racing form and look at a set of data, but have the memory of watching those races and the circumstances of the tracks on those days. Was there bias? What was the weather like? Having seen the full race, was there traffic trouble along the way? So I'll probably take 30 minutes and look at the form so I can invest $20 to $40. But no real serious money here because I haven't committed the time into doing that. Well, the playoffs march on in both the NHL and the NBA, and in about 20 minutes we're going to talk to Adam Amin, the TV play-by-play voice of the Chicago Bulls, and get his thoughts not only on these playoff series. We're going to have three game sevens in the Eastern Conference, preview the Western Conference semifinal series. We've got the Lakers in a shocker there. They were a 5-1 underdog with their injuries against the Rockets. They'll be taking on OKC, and our Timberwolves will be battling with the San Antonio Spurs. So we'll talk to Adam just about 20 minutes from now and get his thoughts on the direction that the Bulls are headed as well. Here's my high-level thoughts on the NBA before we get into particular matchups that we still have going on here. It's interesting. Derek took a phone call from Colin Coward, I believe it was Thursday morning, that I was able to be a part of, and he had some questions about our operations and about VSiN, but I do tape one segment out of Coward's show that I watch every week, and that's his first segment of the second hour on Mondays, and it's called Where Colin Was Right and Where Colin Was Wrong, and he goes back and keeps score on himself on things that he said generally in the past 2 to 3 months. Could go back further than that, but where he's concluded he was right about something or wrong about something. So I think it always adds an air of accountability to folks that operate in this space, and we try to do that as much as possible here on this show. So we had two series plays in the NBA in the first round, both dogs, where we took shots on prices. We had Atlanta plus 220. I told you last Saturday I didn't feel great about it, even though the Hawks were up a 2-1 on the Knicks. You know, they had stolen game two in New York that the Knicks had controlled, and they rallied in the last 4 minutes and won by one. And then game three in Atlanta, you know, the Knicks had the lead with under a minute to go, and then the Knicks had the last shot as well, and Brunson turned the ball over. So Atlanta was up 2-1, but on the strength of 2 1-point victories. And my foreboding feelings were correct, as the Knicks pretty easily won the next three games in that series to win 4-2. I was in the book on Thursday evening because both the Stars, who we had in the series over, the Wild, who we had in the series over the Stars, and of course the Timberwolves, who we had in the series over the Nuggets, were playing, and Knicks Hawks was game six as well, so I wasn't really paying any attention to it. And I looked up, and they're up 41 points with 6 minutes to go in the second quarter. It was like 78-37. Knicks over Hawks in Atlanta. I thought it was the UConn women's score. They were trouncing Georgia Tech. It's pretty amazing. Lakers up 25 on the road last night. It closed out the Rockets 4-2. Nobody quits like the NBA. So we lose that series plus 220 with the Hawks, but we did come back, and what a gutty performance by the Timberwolves. You lose Anthony Edwards in game number four. Get handled very easily by Denver. Denver, a 10-point favorite at home in game five. Probably should have won by 20. Minnesota made it interesting late, interesting towards the number. Denver ends up covering minus 12, winning by 12, laying 10. And then in game six, Denver, a 7-point road favorite in Minneapolis. Ayo Dosunmu can't go. DiVincenzo out. Anthony Edwards out. So the Timberwolves missing three of their top five players, and somehow, some way, they're able to defeat Denver and march on to the Western Conference semifinals. And so I say it from this perspective. You know, we talk about nepotism in sports and nepotism in life and how certain people get jobs. And what about David Adelman? What kind of a job did he do with the Denver Nuggets this year? And what qualified him to be the head coach other than that he grew up in the game as Rick Adelman's son? I might have left him at the Mall of America if I'm the Denver Nuggets on Thursday night. You cannot lose to the Timberwolves without their top three players when you have a chance to win that game and then face a shorthanded Timberwolves squad again in Game 7 in Denver. It's just absolutely, totally inexcusable. And I don't know how Denver doesn't move on from the Adelman era. I mean, we're not, how far we moved are we from Malone winning a championship in Denver just a few short years ago. And now he's at North Carolina, and the Nuggets are looking for answers there. But we cash plus 280 with our Timberwolves tickets. So win one, lose one, but both big dogs. So we come out ahead there if you tailed along. Game one Monday now in San Antonio between the Timberwolves and the Spurs. We said before the playoffs started, we thought the winner of the Denver-Minnesota series would make the Western Conference Finals against OKC. Not anticipating, obviously, the injuries. Dosunmu is going to be back. You'll get DiVincenzo back, probably in game one, maybe in game two. And if everything goes okay with Anthony Edwards, he should probably be back for game three in Minnesota. The series price here, though, disrespectful again. The Spurs, minus -1450. So, in other words, you have to bet $29 to win $2 for the Spurs to win the series. You get back $9 on the Timberwolves. So, it's 9-1 for the if Minnesota can somehow get one of these first two games in San Antonio, I certainly think they have a puncher's chance, obviously, with getting Anthony Edwards back at that point. All right, let's turn our attention now to the NHL and how good have these playoffs been. For as many games in the NBA that were 30, 30, 40, 50-point blowouts that we've had in the playoffs, these NHL games have just been absolutely terrific. The Golden Knights win in Utah last night to march on. In the first five games of that series, the Utah Mammoth led in the third period in every game. At some point in the third period, the Utah Mammoth had led in every game. That's the first time in the history of the Stanley Cup playoffs that a team had led in the third period of the first five games of a series and hasn't either won the series or was leading in the series. It's the first time ever. Well, it didn't happen last night because the Knights are up 2-0 going to the third. Utah got a goal, and then the Knights added two more in an empty netter to win 5-1. They will be taking on, surprise, 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 the Anaheim Ducks, who defeated the two-time defending Western Conference champion Edmonton Oilers. Edmonton had made two runs to the Stanley Cup Finals in the last 2 years, but Joel Quenneville's team just created too many high-danger chances. Give credit to Q. He didn't try to have his team do something that they really hadn't done all year, which is play lockdown defense, but rather say we're going to have to go out and win high-scoring games against Edmonton, and that's what they did. That's, in fact, what they did. So now, moving on, we will have Anaheim against VGK with home ice advantage in that series. Interesting price here. VGK opened $1.70 against Utah. They opened $1.90 against Anaheim. We'll watch where the money goes in this series. You should note that the Ducks won all three meetings with the Golden Knights this year. So they've seemingly had their number two of the games. Did go to overtime, and I think this is going to be another series where the Knights are really going to have to work. Yes, they were the Pacific Division champions, but there was going to be nothing easy about this. I took my son to Game 5 at T-Mobile Arena here in Las Vegas on Wednesday night, and now that's the game that went to double overtime. The Knights tied it with 51 seconds to go, and then they won it in double overtime. Watching that series in person, it was stunning how much faster the Mammoth were than the Knights. The Knights are, they're a very slow team. They don't have the skating speed, really outside of Jack Eichel. That's elite. And so, you know, they have of knowledge of how to play. Obviously, the power play was much better last night in Game 6. There was a situation with a cross-check by a Mammoth player, and then the whistle, and then the Knights retaliated. So there was a 4-on-4 in overtime. The Knights played it like a penalty kill because they knew they couldn't skate around with the Mammoth. Look about the speed advantage will not be as distinct with Anaheim. For as much as they create a lot of dangerous chances, it's not necessarily due to their speed going up and down the ice. But I think this will be a terrific series. When we do where Colin was right and where Colin was wrong, and we look at the NHL, the series that we bet in the first round, remember we had Minnesota on the future pick. In other words, Dallas to lose in the first round, plus 145. Dallas scored one 5-on-5 goal in the last 270-plus minutes in that series. Pretty stunning. Hughes was great. The Wall of St. Paul, Jesper Wallstedt in goal, was great for Minnesota, and they beat Dallas 4-2. So we won that series. Remember, we also had the Philadelphia Flyers at plus 150 off the opener over Pittsburgh. We won that bet, but we did lose with the Mammoth. We had the Mammoth as well at plus 153. So 2-1. 2-1 in series prices in the NHL. Now, Colorado, after Minnesota's victory Thursday night, Colorado got to as high as minus 290 in this series. I make the price on this series Colorado somewhere around minus 210. So I grabbed Minnesota plus 250 here. And I do also have, these are the two teams I have futures on out of the West, Colorado and Minnesota. Obviously, Minnesota at a much higher price. But I did take the Wild plus 250 in this series. I think they will punish Colorado physically in each game, which is something Dallas wouldn't have done. I think Colorado would have much rather have played Dallas in this series. But look, they played them very tight during the course of the year. I think Colorado knows who Minnesota is. I will make the key to this series the Colorado power play, who ranked near the bottom in the league. And you think about all the offensive talent that Colorado has. They were the best 5-on-5 team in the league during the course of the regular season. They scored the most goals in the third period of any team and had the second best goal differential in the third period, only behind the Vegas Golden Knights. How Colorado's power play performs in this series, I think, will be the key. If they cannot be effective on the power play, which was the only reason Dallas stayed in games, because they could not compete with Minnesota 5-on-5, I say the winner of this series will be, how does the Colorado power play go? In the East, we have one game seven out of all the first round series in the NHL, and that is Montreal-Tampa Bay. And I don't know if I can recall a series that's been closer than this series. Five of the six games have gone to overtime, including last night. Tampa wins on the road at the Bell Center in Montreal, 1-0 in overtime. Every single game has been a one-goal game. And in all the minutes that have been played in this series, there's only been 5 minutes of action where either team had a two-goal lead. Think about that. That's stunning. The amount of time tied and the amount of time where one team was up by one is 97% of this series. These two teams, there's nothing that has separated them. When we look at the line for tomorrow in Tampa for Game 7, Tampa $1.55 favorite, take back $1.37 on the Canadiens. And the total 5.5, heavily juiced to the under, minus 135. So let's take a look at the other series. Carolina swept Ottawa in four games, although each game was a battle. And the Flyers won the first three games, and then the Penguins got games four and five. Philadelphia wins another 1-0 game in overtime. Stunning. You rarely see games go to overtime, play regulation without a goal. And they get the goal in overtime to beat the Pittsburgh Penguins. So now Philadelphia marches on to play Carolina. I wasn't going to play this series. I like Rick Tocchet. I think he made the right decision to get out of Vancouver and coach this young group of kids. And there's no superstars on this Flyers team. There could be a couple of them that develop into it, but I think they play the hockey the right way, and they play without ego. I talked for years about Carolina's struggles once they get beyond the first round of the playoffs. They play a different style than any other team does during the course of the regular season. They're max effort, max intensity every night out there. They create a lot of shots on goals and limit you on shots on goals. Freddie Anderson was very good. I questioned that choice by Brendan Moore to play him. He was very good in net against Ottawa, although Ottawa didn't put a lot of pucks on him. The open, I make this series $3. I think Carolina should be $2.90 or $3 favorite. There was a book here in Las Vegas that opened this $2.10. I didn't see it right away, but I saw it as the numbers started to move on the board. So I ended up laying $2.40 with Carolina over Philadelphia in this series, and that's not something I normally do, but I thought the price was way off. Right now, the consensus on the board here is minus -330. So I think we've got some good value on both of these series. We've got minus -240 on Carolina, where the price now is -330, and we've got plus +250 on Minnesota, where the price right now is $2. I will have to wait to see what happens, obviously, with who Buffalo plays, whether it's Montreal or Tampa Bay. I don't have a strong lean there, and I lean Anaheim here in this series against the Knights, but I don't know how many times I want to step in front of the Knights. I've done this before in the playoffs and usually been on the wrong side of it. Just a reminder, we're taking you right up till 9 o'clock when Inside the Clubhouse with David Haugh and Bruce Levine will be on. Ben Brown, Cubs reliever, will join the program at 10 today, and at 10:30, White Sox TV analyst Steve Stone. We got to get Stoney on this show when we get into July or August once the playoffs are done in the NBA and the NHL. Many afternoon growing up listening to him and Harry on WGN call the Cubs games. A couple of thoughts on prediction markets. And I spoke quite passionately about this with the Super Bowl and all the money that was wagered in prediction markets on what was Bad Bunny's first song going to be at halftime. More money was wagered on that in prediction markets than was bet on the Super Bowl in the state of Nevada at the regulated books. And, of course, the outcome is known because Bad Bunny knows and all his musicians know and all the dancers know and everybody that was at rehearsal knows what his first song is going to be out of halftime. Well, we had two instances of this in the last couple weeks of something similar happening. First, at Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris, that's something you can wager on in prediction markets is the high temperatures in these different major cities. So for poly markets, there is a temperature sensor that's located on one of the roads at Charles de Gaulle Airport. But it's not guarded. It's not secured. So a Frenchman goes there with a hairdryer, a battery-powered hairdryer, and spikes up the temperature. He did this twice in April. There's an incredible video of this. You can go online and Google whatever and watch this video of this guy with his hairdryer spiking the temperature, which is the official reading for poly markets. And he won something like $34,000. Not a huge amount, but $34,000 betting over what the high temperature was going to be in Paris on two different dates in April. And he's been arrested, and this French Meteorological Society, whatever it is that's their official, is charging him with these crimes, and he faces up to 7 years in prison, which we'll follow that case. Certainly not worth it for only $34,000. The other case is of a U.S. actually someone in the U.S. Army in the Special Forces that was involved in planning and then executing the overthrow of Maduro in Venezuela. Now, he went all in here, and bet on several different things on Poly Markets. Will he be out of power by a certain date? What's the method he'll be out of power, that the U.S. will capture him, right? And made over $400,000 betting on these things that he participated in, helped plan and execute the operation. I have to tell you, when you're betting on these exchanges, there's somebody on the other end of that. You know, it wasn't Poly Markets that lost $400,000. It was their customers betting on the other end of this. Outcome that was fixed. Outcome that was known. It was their customers that lost that were betting on the temperatures in Paris. So I say once again, when you get involved with these exchanges, caveat emptor. Let the buyer beware. All right, coming up after the break, we're going to talk to Adam Amin. It's Palm Saturdays here on 104.3 The Score.
We're back with more Palm Saturdays, starring Circa's Vice President of Operations, Mike Palm, live from Bar Canada at the D from downtown Las Vegas. Presented by Circa Sports. Sports betting the way it should be, with no bet fees, on 104.3 The Score.
Welcome back into Palm Saturdays here on The Score. I'm sitting at Bar Canada here at the D in downtown Las Vegas. In a few moments, we're going to speak with Adam Amin, the play-by-play voice, of course, of the Chicago Bulls. And you've heard Adam obviously doing many other sports, including the NFL, where I absolutely love his work with Mark Sanchez. And if we have time, ask him a question about Sanchez as well. So joining us, courtesy of the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline, betting the way it should be, it is Adam Amin. Adam, thanks for getting up early with us here on The Score.
Absolutely, bud. Great to talk to you.
Yeah, a big fan of your work. Let's start with the Bulls. Billy Donovan steps down, wants to give the organization a clean slate in hiring your president, your GM, your head coach. I'm trying to read the tea leaves here, and I don't know if you have any sense or your own thoughts on this. It looks like perhaps targeting the Timberwolves, both the general manager and the assistant head coach possibly coming in. What's your sense on the direction that the Bulls are going to go in filling these vacancies?
This is one of the places where I'm happy to be disconnected, you know, and just kind of see where the road takes this organization. But, yeah, I read the same stuff that you guys do and probably hear some of the same chatter that you guys do. And it does seem like Matt Lloyd is a front runner for this position, but it seems like he'd be a great choice just off of pedigree, experience in the Bulls organization, familiarity with the front office and with ownership, and with obviously the success. You know, it certainly helps and it certainly looks better for any person in any position applying for a job when the company that you already work for is doing very, very well. And that seems to be the case with Minnesota after dealing with a bunch of injuries and still being able to knock out the Nuggets and move on to the second round. You know, and seeing some of the fruits of the labor that organization has gone through over the last couple of years, making the run to the Western Conference Finals and obviously being a really difficult team to play come playoff time, as has been the case the last several seasons. He certainly seems like he'd be a front runner for it. And Mike Anori is one of the few assistant coaches that I was familiar with and I think a lot of the league is familiar with. Micah usually does, like, you know, during the regular season, he'll do like the halftime interview with the Minnesota Timberwolves broadcast. And that's where people kind of first got their exposure to Mike Anori. Chris Finch, I think, tore his ACL a couple of years ago, if I'm not mistaken. I think he got run into on the sidelines and had to step away from the team for a couple of games. And Mike Anori stepped right in and he has done an excellent job with that group. And he's a really well-respected assistant coach on that staff, and as you said, basically the associate head coach. And he's one of the few assistant coaches, along with, you know, somebody like a Sam Cassell, that I would have looked at, you know, and thought, all right, well, this is somebody that you should go pursue if you're looking for somebody that's not, you know, a little bit more familiar or is not a I don't like to use the word retread. I think that's an insult to, you know, certain people, but if you're not going to go hire somebody that's already been through the head coaching ranks, and you're going to go try to find somebody that's maybe a diamond in the rough, or you're going to try to find somebody who's on their way up, I think the look at these two guys in Matt Lloyd and Mike Anori is probably where you would lean, just based off of common sense and certainly an understanding of what's going on in the league and what's going on with that particular organization, the success that they've had.
We end up getting three game sevens in the Eastern Conference out of the four first round series. I want to start in Orlando last night. I played the Magic as a 3.5 point home underdog, thinking they'd been just the better team in the series. And you're up 24 points at half, and then a funny thing happens on the way to the Forum, and you miss 21 straight shots, and the Pistons rally. I don't know if I've ever seen that in an NBA game, where a team just can go, you know, basically when you talk about from the end of the third quarter to the fourth quarter, almost a full quarter, and not make a shot. I know several of the Orlando Magic players said it was just one of those nights, but it wasn't just one of those nights. It was such an aberration. Speak about how they overcome that as they head to Detroit for Game 7, and your thoughts on who do you think will ultimately prevail?
I think this kind of boosts, you know, Detroit, obviously, and gives them the confidence that they need to put a series away, and that's what teams in the playoffs look for. They look for weaknesses. They look to push you into situations where you feel uncomfortable, and Detroit has always been very, very good at that. But as you said, I agree with you. The Magic had outplayed Detroit for Game 1. They outplayed them for several of the stretches during the series, and they certainly did that to start Game 6. And I look at Jalen Suggs and how he was playing. He was, you know, flying around the court and causing havoc defensively. Former Bull Wendell Carter Jr. was playing big against big player in Jalen Duren. Paolo Banchero is a reliable big shot player, you know, and again, we've talked about Franz Wagner and his lack of availability that certainly hurts in a Game 7 situation, but I've been impressed with their role players more than anything else. De Silva and Black and Jamal Kane, who's got maybe the biggest dunk of the first round so far. But Cade Cunningham, if he's the best player on the floor on Sunday, then I think the Pistons are going to walk away with it. I'm with you. I can't remember the last time we saw something like this. My first thought was 2018, Game 7, Western Conference. I want to say it was the second round, or maybe it was the Western Conference Finals, when the Rockets missed 27 straight threes against Golden State. I think that must have been the conference final that year. And that was a shocker to watch, like, one of the worst shooting stretches in maybe playoff history. And the Rockets just could not make a three-pointer in that whole second half, basically. So that's kind of what it reminded me of, the level of collapse that we saw the other night. But that's kind of what it reminded me of. That was the first place my head went.
We're speaking with Adam Amin. Of course, everyone knows his work across the different sports forums and as the play-by-play voice of the Bulls. Adam, it was an interesting thing from a betting markets perspective in the NBA this year. As we got to the All-Star break, basically there were four teams that all had the same odds to win the Eastern Conference, the Pistons, the Cavs, the Knicks, and the Celtics. And then the Celtics get Jason Tatum back, and the market swung quite a bit to them being favored. You know, they were up 3-1, looking to close out at home in Game 5. Philly wins, and then Philly wins pretty impressively in Game 6 to force a Game 7. How surprised are you that the Sixers have been able to extend this to 7 games, and how concerned would you be as a Celtics fan?
I mean, you know, they've had a history, and they played Game 7s in recent memory. I called one of those games several years ago, and I know what that rivalry is like, but I'm not shocked that Philadelphia's ability to extend a series or to win games in a playoff situation right now, because, you know, I had this conversation with my partner Stacey King on one of the late season Bulls broadcasts when they were in Philadelphia, and, you know, the Sixers ran away with the game, and that was when Joel Embiid and Paul George had both come back from injury and suspension, respectively. And that was still when they were without Tyrese Maxey. They were without Kelly Oubre. VJ Edgecombe is a rookie, but he was playing at a very, very high level. And I thought that they were a different-looking team, and Stacey made the point as well, that they're just a different team when Embiid is healthy and engaged. And Tyrese Maxey is still one of the legitimate scorers in this league, and that's what you need come playoff time. And I look at blueprints, you know, as we've talked about what the Bulls are looking to do. Like, you're still going to need a superstar, and you're going to need a young player that can step up in a big way, and you're going to need a legit backcourt scorer. And that's the formula for what Philadelphia has had. Now, I still feel like going back to Boston, it's one of the tougher atmospheres to play, in particular Game 7. It's always a boost in terms of defensive energy for a team, especially at a place like that where the atmosphere is really, really good. I still feel like Boston's in the best position. I feel like the home teams are always in the best position to win Game 7, and we've heard a lot of that discussion in the last couple of years. The Thunder talked about that. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander talked about that, needing and wanting home court advantage in Game 7. I trust the home team in Game 7 more often than not, but I feel like Philadelphia, it's not shocking to me, considering that they've been at full strength for most of this series, that they've been able to push Boston to this point. That was going to be a difficult out as long as Philadelphia was healthy. It's so hard to gauge the regular season for them when George misses 25 games, Embiid basically misses half a season, Maxey misses a bunch of time. It's hard to gauge that, but once you get to playoff time, I think the pure talent kind of shines through, and you see why these teams can be as dangerous as they are.
Adam, we offer our listeners a chance to send in their question they have for the guest each week, and then I choose one. So here's our listener's question this week. Adam, in theory, the booth is simple. As the play-by-play man, you call the game while the color commentator analyzes. But let's be honest, have you ever caught yourself stepping into the analyst's lane? Not just describing the play, but breaking it down and giving opinions, almost taking over your partner's job. And when and if that happens, how quickly can it create friction where that overlapped turned into real tension, where the chemistry slipped and it wasn't just noticeable internally, but management had to step in and say, this pair isn't working, and make a change?
You know, it's a great question. It's a very inside the you know, profession question. I think it's a great one. I'm very fortunate in that I've never had that problem, as far as I know. I've never had friction really with an analyst. I've had analysts that I've worked with that maybe like you don't get along with right away, or you only work a couple games together, so you don't really have time to build up like rapport and chemistry. I've worked with four different NFL analysts last year, just based on circumstances. And you know, like I worked with Kurt Warner for one game last season, and Kurt's a great guy. He's on the score several times during football season. And, you know, after about two drives in the first game that we had ever worked together, it's like, oh, this is great. This is easy. I think as the question went, the jobs are simple. Play-by-play announcer essentially gives you the who and the what. The analyst gives you the how and the why. But I think that on good broadcast, those lines blur. And the analyst is welcome to tell stories and talk about what they feel is important about that particular player. I think it's good for a play-by-play announcer when they have the prerequisite knowledge to be able to talk a little bit about breaking the game down, more so for the purpose of setting the analyst up rather than breaking the game down themselves or being, you know, the forefront of it. But I think, you know, with Stacey and I think we're very fortunate. He talks about players. He has stories about guys. He delves into that territory. And I know the game fairly well. And if I don't know the game, I like to set my analyst up to learn about it. And I think that's where our crossover comes. And I think that's where we've formed a lot of chemistry and a lot of appreciation for each other. And I hope that comes off during the broadcast, and I hope that comes off in the broadcast, you know, regardless of the partner that I'm fortunate to work with.
I'm a big believer, Adam, in that the sound of a broadcast is as important as the quality of the picture. And I'm very snobbish about who I listen to. You know, in hockey, you can listen to, if you buy the package, you can listen to either club's local crew. And I have certain ones I always will listen to and certain ones I won't. But it's important to me. One of the people, and you mentioned we worked with four different people in the NFL last year, and I'm not trying to make you say somebody is great and somebody isn't, but when we think about who are the best and the best analysts, you know, I think Mark Sanchez is criminally underrated. I think I truly enjoy listening to broadcasts he's on, especially when you're on with him. Why doesn't Mark Sanchez considered well, maybe I should ask it this way. Why do you think he might be underrated and not listed as one of the best NFL analysts that we have working today?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was fortunate to work with him the parts of the last two seasons, and obviously what's taken place just in the last year is pretty unfortunate, and you know, I'm hoping the best for him. But in the time that I did work with him and the time that we worked together, I loved working with him, and he was a great teammate to us. And I think part of it is familiarity. You know, he's only been doing this, you know, he'd only been doing this for a handful of years. And I know that's like, well, you've been doing this long enough, shouldn't, you know, we should know who you are. I think that's just a general theme of American sports broadcasting. And I've been doing it a long time. I've been doing it on national TV for 15 years. But only recently in the last few seasons has maybe my work gotten noticed, because you just have to build a familiarity with an audience. NFL fans, I've been doing NFL on TV for six seasons. That's it. You know, and that's a decent amount of games. You know, that's basically 100 games that I've done now on national TV, if not a little bit more than that. But you have to have the big moments. You have to have fans tune in at the right time on, you know, when they're watching Red Zone, and you have to have exciting games so that Red Zone uses you, or you have to be on a game that's going to 65% of the country that week because that's a bigger game and that's when more fans might actually get a chance to see you. I work on a regional broadcast, and I think that's part of it. You know, the familiarity is what breeds, or seeing somebody is what breeds familiarity. Like, you get comfortable with, you know, the announcers that you listen to. It took Greg Olsen a while to get noticed, but when you noticed him, you never stopped noticing him. It's the same deal with play-by-play announcers, and I think that's how it's worked for the Kevin Burkharts of the world, who have just started to step into the forefront the last, you know, four or five seasons, but Kevin's been doing big games for more than 10 years at this point. So it's about familiarity. It's about getting comfortable with somebody, and I think that's just how the NFL works, because it is such a large-scale sport in this country. It's the biggest thing we have going, and I think that's how people gravitate to it and then absorb it. And the announcers that you get familiar with who deliver, you have to obviously give quality, consistent work. I think over time is how play-by-play announcers and analysts kind of get noticed and become a little bit more comfortable with the audience.
Final question, Adam, and we appreciate your time this morning. If you could only be one of these two things, which would you rather be? The best play-by-play announcer in the world or the biggest DJ in the world?
That is an incredibly tempting question, because if you asked the 13-year-old version of me and you asked the 35-year-old version of me, they would probably have very different answers. And now the 39-year-old version of me would probably be as greedy as possible and say, Is there a chance to be both? But I love my career, and I think I still think this has been a pursuit worth going after. So being hopefully one of these days we'll get to call some of the biggest games that we've got going. But if it doesn't happen, that's okay. We'll go to the backup plan, I guess.
That's Adam Amin, everybody. Adam, thanks for the time. And when we come back, we'll give you our best bets here on Palm Saturdays. It's 104.3 The Score.
We're back with more Palm Saturdays, starring Circa's Vice President of Operations, Mike Palm, live from Bar Canada at the D from downtown Las Vegas. Presented by Circa Sports. Sports betting the way it should be, with no bet fees, on 104.3 The Score.
Welcome back into Palm Saturdays here as we close out the show and take you right to the top of the hour when David Haw and Bruce Levine bring you inside the clubhouse. They're back after their one-week absence from the Molly and Haw draft special. 10 o'clock, they're going to talk to Ben Brown, and at 10:30, Steve Stone, always a must listen. All right, let's recap where we were with bets and give out our best bets for the day. Just a reminder, we have the Hurricanes over the Flyers in the series. We were able to lay 240 with that price. If you can find $3 or less, I still think that's appropriate. Anything over $3 would be a pass for me. You can also consider betting Carolina minus a game and a half, meaning that they have to win in six or fewer. I've seen that price as low as around minus $1.20, $1.25. I think that's another option if the series price has gotten over $3. And then we also took Minnesota plus 250. If at some point you can find it plus 240, check your outs that you have, especially in the state of Illinois. Who are listening here, that would be the key point for me. All right, there's one game on the ice tonight, and that's game one of the, you would say, Metro Final or Eastern Conference Semifinal. Philadelphia off the overtime game to close out. Pittsburgh will go to Raleigh to take on the Hurricanes. I think this is a tough spot for the Flyers tonight. Hurricanes obviously rested after sweeping Ottawa. And if that soft Penguins defense could thwart Philadelphia in this series. Philadelphia, you know, in six games did not score a goal in the first period. Very interesting. Could consider under in the first period tonight as well. But I laid a puck and a half. Puck line tonight with the Hurricanes. You can find that at plus 125. All right, then our other action is going to be on the diamond. I did not touch the Cubs or the White Sox. I watched every bit of the White Sox game last night. That was very impressive as they took full control of that game against the Padres. I have to tell you, it's they're now up to 15-17 and in a division where, you know, 82 or 83 wins might win it. I don't know. Let's hope that they can hang around and make this an interesting summer. Noah Schultz was great again. Moves his record to 2-1. Didn't give up any runs. Two-hit ball over six innings. Burke going tonight against Michael King for the Padres. Michael King's sort of somehow quietly become the Padres' ace. But Burke at a big price tonight, plus 165 on the White Sox. That game goes at 7:40 from Petco in San Diego. And then Cubs, I thought they were going to knock out the D-backs early yesterday. They didn't, but they still got the win to run their record to 20-12. Shoto Imanaga, two bad starts to start the year, three great starts, and then struggled a little bit at Dodger Stadium last weekend. He takes the hill today against Ryan Nelson. Ryan Nelson, who gave up two starts ago, eight runs while only recording one out in a home game. Imanaga here, minus $1.58 and a total of seven today at Wrigley. No official play on either of those games. Let's go to St. Louis, where the Cardinals have certainly outperformed my expectations. They beat the Dodgers. Dodgers in a little bit of a slump here, although it doesn't seem to bother them. You know, wake me up when September ends for the Dodgers. But Rory Sasaki going today, so that means I'm going to play the over. I play the over in Rory Sasaki starts. If you get two men on base to start an inning, he literally will be on the verge of tears, which we saw him in the playoffs last year crying when they moved him to the bullpen and he had a bad outing. And then the stories come from when he pitched in Japan of him crying, bad outings, no good for me. You know, if they wouldn't have paid all this money to get him, I think he'd be in the minor leagues right now. But what are you going to do with him? Well, they put him back into the starting rotation. He did beat the Cubs last weekend, but I'm going to go over nine. I know it's a little bit of a high total. Warmer weather in St. Louis today against McGreevy. So over nine there. As you know, if you are a loyal listener of the show, we auto-play every Washington Nationals game over. You bet the overnight number. It's 8.5 against the Brewers today. We've been hitting at almost 70% on this blindly betting Nationals over until the market adjusts and start making these games 9 and 9.5. You're still seeing 8 and 8.5 every day on the Nationals. So Brewers, Nationals over 8.5. Now, here's a play that I didn't necessarily would have thought of coming into today, but I did a little digging into the numbers here, and I followed the Astros because my biggest preseason play was fading the Astros, under 85 wins, no playoffs. Two pitchers that have done very well so far, starting pitchers this year, Arrigetti. Remember Spencer Arrigetti a couple of years ago lost like his first seven starts on the road? Well, he's 3-0 this year with an ERA of 2. And Connelly early going for the Red Sox. His ERA is below 3 as well. I played this game the first 5. I want to take the bullpens out of it here. And the total was 5 at even money. So Astros, Red Sox, first 5 inning total. Under 5, you can get that at even money. And then I'm going to close with this. This might be one of the best bets in sports every year. And it's Seth Lugo before the All-Star break to go over the number of recorded outs. He's 5-1 to the over this year. His arm's going to go bad again. He'll have a dead arm. He'll have to go on the IL for a couple of weeks in late July or early August. But before that, he's going to get you there. Gave up 6 runs in the first 2 innings in Kansas City on Sunday. They still let him throw 100 pitches. He went over. Over 17.5 outs tonight in Seattle. Book it. Thanks for listening, folks. Good luck on your Derby bets, and we'll see you next Saturday on Palm Saturdays. Up next, inside the clubhouse, here on 104.3 The Score.